Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Love Strategy. I'm Nina Atwood, and my purpose is to take you on an inspiring journey of self-discovery and relationship recovery. I'm the host of the show, but this is really all about you, and it's for you, the single woman who wants to date smart and find the love of her life. On this show, casual sex is dumb, being choosy is smart, and the prize is a great marriage for life. So please listen, call in, and share your dating and relationship stories. Ask the questions that keep you awake at night and get coaching. The number to call in is 347-308-8511. That's 347-308-8511. Now, stay tuned for Love Strategy.
Hello, everybody. This is Nina Atwood. Welcome to Love Strategies. If you are joining us for the first time tonight, welcome to the show. I've got lots to cover with you tonight. One of the things we're going to talk about is the top four ways that women unknowingly wreck what could be a good relationship. So relationships that are brand new require a lot of attention, focus, and care and feeding. It can be great or it can be awful depending on how you set the tone. So we're going to be talking about that because I think there are four things that women unconsciously do that sometimes wreck the beginnings of a potential really great relationship. Before we get into that, though, I want to cover something very serious with you, and it relates to a story that appeared in the Washington Post this weekend and was printed in our local paper as well, and that's about dating violence and one of the signs or behaviors leading up to that violence is harassment over text messages. So very interesting story that's coming out and revealing to us about the nature of these potentially very dangerous relationships that can happen, especially with, I think, with younger people. And then lastly, we're going to be taking some questions either by phone or over email. So if you have a dating or relationship situation going on in your life that you want to get some advice about, call in. The number to call is 347-308-8511, or you can email me at Nina, N-I-N-A, at singlescoach.com, S-I-N-G-L-E-S-C-O-A-C-H. And if you're not listening live, if you've downloaded this show, you can still email your questions to me, Nina at singlescoach.com, to be included in a future show. So this weekend, there was an article that came out in the Washington Post about dating violence and really outlining the extent of the things that are happening, particularly with regard to text messaging that is harassing in nature and even threatening in nature, and how the use of text messaging inappropriately is often one of the signs that is now that we are now beginning to understand is one of the signs that's telling us that something really bad is coming down the pike and that we need to pay attention to it. So there's some very prominent cases that have grabbed media attention recently. One is a University of Virginia lacrosse player by the name of Yardley, I think, Love, who was reportedly beaten to death by her ex-boyfriend. And so the police are now looking at all of the text messages that transpired between him and her leading up to her murder. Another case that's been high profile recently is 19-year-old Siobhan Russell from Oak Hill, Virginia, who was killed by her boyfriend. And this actually transpired last year, but her parents, after her death, found loads of very disturbing text messages to their daughter all creating signs or giving signs that something tragic was brewing. In another case outlined in this article in Rockville, a woman in her 20s was so closely tracked that her partner insisted she text him photos to prove where she was at all times of the day and night, and that she had to stand near a clock displaying the time when she sent him these photos. Just crazy, really ridiculous. And so what's emerging from all of these cases is that they're calling it textual harassment, and it's getting more attention because of the concerns about dating violence and the use of this methodology to really make somebody's life miserable, and in some cases it's leading to violence. So about a dozen states have passed or are considering laws to bring dating violence education into the schools. And one of the reasons that they are being pushed to do that is because of parents like the Casillas, who are from Pennsylvania, and Gary Casilla has been pushing for that legislative change because of his daughter, Demi, who was killed a day after her 16th birthday in 2007. And her dad says that she broke up with her boyfriend, who the family thought of as likable, but maybe a little jealous. And in the days before Demi's death, Gary Casilla said that he learned later, I guess by looking at her phone, that her ex-boyfriend had sent text messages over and over again with messages like, "You know you can't live without me, and you need to see me, and I'm bawling my eyes out," and so on and so forth. So showing how desperate he was feeling emotionally. And so when Demi Casilla finally agreed to see the boy, he came over when she was alone and stabbed her 16 times in her living room. So, and Demi's father says he thinks the largely private nature of texting is an important aspect of the problem. He says, and I quote, "When I was growing up, we had one phone in the whole house, and if you were fighting with your boyfriend or girlfriend, everybody knew about it." I think he makes a good point. Things have really changed because now, as we know, teenagers can have a complete life of their own that is transpiring over text messaging that often parents know nothing about. So, but we're beginning to make some progress with this. Last year, Maryland passed a bill to encourage, not require, but encourage, I don't know what that means, encourage school districts to teach the topic of dating violence. And Bill and Michelle Mitchell lost their 21-year-old daughter, Kristen, to dating violence, and they are the ones who pushed very hard for Maryland to pass that bill. It's not enough. You know, they see that and have commented that it was, you know, it's not enough, but it's a step. Their daughter, just hours before she was killed, texted her boyfriend and said, "You're being ridiculous. Why can't I do something with my friends?" They later found out and heard about other text messages, including one that asked why she'd gone to her class rather than spend time with him, her boyfriend. She was a senior at St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia. And so these cases are really just, it's a repeat or a rehash of an old story, which is violent relationships, desperate and harassing relationships that end often in the death of a young woman. So what to do about it? I think that the first thing that you have to do is to face the hard truth that we can't entirely expect to prevent any and every kind of violence, because the truth is, if someone decides to stalk and kill someone else, it's very difficult to prevent it. Even when there are warning signs, often police are not able to act until after something happens. So if you're listening to this and you've been a victim of some kind, you should not self-blame Instead, you should learn and pass the learning along. And if someone you love has been a victim, the same thing. It's about learning and passing that along. So that said, even though, you know, I think we are not omniscient enough to prevent all the bad things that we would like to, still, there are ways to begin to identify these problems and to act preventatively. And I think that we really have to do that by raising the awareness about the issue, which clearly is being done. But secondly, I think there are things that parents of teenagers really need to do. And the one thing, one of the most important things I think a parent of a teenage daughter can do is to get more involved in her love life. And not just the girls, I think parents of teenage boys need to be more involved as well. And I think we have to really reexamine this notion of how important it is to give kids their privacy. I think in the name of the almighty privacy of teenagers, I think too many parents have taken a back seat. They've given their teenagers way too much freedom. They've not given them enough oversight and guidance. What we know about teenagers is that they haven't yet developed the ability to look ahead very far in their lives. There's actually a part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, where planning and reasoning and being able to look ahead occurs, doesn't really develop until about age 24. So what that should tell you as parents is that until they are pretty much finished with college and beginning to launch their own lives in the world, you've got to be involved, because they're not going to see things that you would see. When there's still teenagers living in your home underage, I think it is mandatory. You just have to be more involved in your kids' lives. I think that when you give kids a cell phone with the with the ability to text message, and usually people are giving kids those unlimited texting plans, which means they can sit and do it all day long if they want to. It doesn't cost anymore. But I think that you have to let them know that it's a privilege to have that. It is not an entitlement. It is not a right. It is a privilege. And secondly, it's not going to be private. That it is, because you are the person providing the cell phone and they are underage, it belongs to you as the parent. That you are going to supervise it just as you would supervise other aspects of your child's life. So you have to let them know that right up front, so they never have the expectation, oh, this is mine. I get to have this in privacy. No, you don't. It is not yours. I'm buying it for you. I'm your parent. I'm buying it for you. I'm giving it to you as a privilege. That privilege can be taken away. And secondly, it will be supervised. And then, of course, if you see an unusual number of texts that are coming from any one other kid, that's a big clue that something is going awry. There's some unhealthy thing going on in that relationship between this other child and your child. And of course, if those text messages sound desperate or threatening in any kind of way, you've got to take action. I think you have to go to the other child's parents, and you have to talk to them about it, show them the text messages. If they refuse to act or refuse to get involved, I think you have to then go to the police. And more and more states are enacting laws that prohibit harassment. I suspect that if textual harassment is not yet on the law books in very many states, it will be. It will be. So you have to act on it. Of course, if your child or your son or daughter is in college, especially if they're away from home, you can't really supervise them the same way. But what you can do is you can educate them. So before they go away to school or when they're home on break, that is the time for you to sit down with them and to say, look, I want to make you aware of these things. Show them the articles that are available out there, and show them the information, and insist that they sit down and talk with you about it. And ask them questions. Don't be afraid to ask questions about who your son or daughter is dating, and tell them that your purpose in asking questions is to discover if they're being safe. Are they dating someone who is safe and caring? And don't be shy about telling them that you want to know and that you want to be involved so that you can help them identify the signs that they might need to identify that would be warning signs that they need to pay attention to, so that you are involved in helping your older child be educated. So, and this one seems like a no-brainer to me, that schools need to be committed to education to help kids identify the danger points in dating and be prepared to take action. And to help them know what the resources are, who they should contact if they are beginning to feel uncomfortable, uneasy, or even threatened. And if you're a parent, you know, if I'm not a parent and I don't have teenage kids, but if I did, I would be pushing very hard for that kind of legislation to be passed to make it mandatory that schools provide that kind of education. Because a lot of things that are going on between these teenagers are happening on the watch of educators. It's happening during school hours. So they need to be very, very involved in helping kids, especially girls, get education about these things. And of course, you know, one of the things that I really believe about parenting teenagers, kids who are not even in college, under college age, and that is to do everything you can as a parent to keep your kids very, very involved in school activities, in things that are very healthy for them to be involved in, group sports, educational opportunities, special classes that cater to whatever their talents and gifts are, that the idea is to keep them so darn busy that they don't have time to think about dating one-on-one. Because the truth is, they don't need to be dating one-on-one. They're not emotionally prepared to handle it. The intensity of those childhood relationships can send kids off down a really destructive pathway in their lives. So, and the prevention for that, for girls, the prevention for those things is to get her involved in things that increase her sense of confidence in herself and her sense of esteem about her accomplishments. And the same thing is really true of boys as well. Because if they are able to be involved in things that fill that inner well of theirs, that inner well that says, you know, that I'm someone valuable and look at the things that I'm accomplishing and that sense of satisfaction at being accomplished, then they're not so desperate and not so needy that they go out there and hook themselves up with other kids in dicey and dangerous and risky relationships that they are far too young to handle, that they're not prepared to handle. So those are the things, and of course, if your teenager is spending time with other kids, of course you want to know who those kids are. You want to meet them in person. If your daughter is dating some guy, you need to meet him. You need to see him face-to-face, sit down with him, and find out who he is, and you need to be paying attention to how they spend time together and when and where and why. So those are some things I think that will begin to help address some of these issues. It's a very serious problem. Using text messages to harass someone is very dangerous because essentially the victim can't get away. No matter where you are, you're always getting those messages. And of course, there's absolutely nothing wrong with changing a phone number if that's what's happening to you. Even if you're not a kid and you're an adult and you're getting any kind of harassing text messages, then it's time to do something about it. And sometimes that means changing your phone number so they don't have it. That might be one step that you would take. Of course, there are other things you can do as well. But we do have to take action about these things. We have to do the best we can do to try to protect our children and especially young women from the very dangerous effects of these kinds of behaviors. So All right, well, we're going to be back in just a moment with more love strategies. So coming up in a moment, we're going to talk about the four ways that you could wreck a new relationship. So stick around. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Nina Atwood. Does this sound familiar to you? You start a new relationship full of hope that maybe this time he's the one. But weeks, months, or even years later, you realize that although the name and face have changed, the story is the same. He's all wrong for you, and now you have to continue suffering or start all over. Well, you don't have to keep repeating the same old patterns. If you want to raise your relationship game and put yourself on a whole new course for a happy, healthy, lasting love, get Temptations of the Single Girl, the 10 Dating Traps You Must Avoid. This is a self-help book like no other. It's a parable, an easy, fast story you can read in 2 to 3 hours. The fact that it's a story and not just dry, boring data means you'll retain the lessons learned far longer. And the more you retain, the greater the changes you'll be able to make in your life. That's why I wrote it this way, to make it easy for you to get what you need to permanently alter your love life for the better. You can get the book by clicking on the book cover right from the show page, or you can go to singlescoach.com, find the tab for books and tapes, then click on Singles Coach A Store. Temptations of the Single Girl is available through Amazon.com and as a Kindle book. And now back to more love strategies.
Okay, we're back, and we're going to be talking about the four ways that you could wreck a new relationship. So here's the thing. The very beginning of a new relationship is where you are setting the tone for everything that is going to happen later. It's an opportunity to establish a foundation. So, you know, you can, just as it is if you're building a house, you got to start with the foundation. You can build a weak one or you can build a strong one. It's pretty clear which direction it is that you want to go. When it comes to relationships, the same is true. The very beginning of the relationship is when you are building the foundation for what happens for the months and years and even decades after that. So it's so tempting in the beginning of a relationship to just go with the flow. And in fact, if you listen to conventional wisdom would have you just go with the flow. Just have a good time. Just relax. Enjoy yourself. Pour yourself a glass of wine or pour a glass of wine for the person that you're dating and just go with the flow. Just let it happen. Let it unfold. But here's the thing. Just going with the flow may feel good now, but later, with hindsight, it can turn out to be disastrous. It can turn out to be the absolutely wrong thing to do. It doesn't always turn out that way, by the way. So because certainly there's always examples of relationships between people that are very good, and they met and they didn't worry about a foundation, and they didn't really do anything in particular to set a stage. They just went with the flow and it somehow turned out okay. But for most people, not setting the foundation in place in a healthy way in the beginning turns out to work out very poorly for them. So, four ways that you can set a weak foundation in the very beginning. I want to go over those because I think sometimes if you look at what it is that you've done in the past that hasn't worked, there are a lot of signposts for you and examining that to determine what to do differently in the future. So one of the big things that women do that wreck their relationships in the very beginning is having sex before you're in a committed relationship. So the choosing is over for you once you've had sex with him. If you like him, if you're really attracted to him and you think he's a neat guy, and you sleep with them before you have a committed relationship, you're done with the choosing. You've already picked him. That's just the way we are wired as women. We want that bonding. We want that connection. That bonding happens very quickly for us, and sex makes it happen very, very fast. And so if the choosing is over for you, the chasing is over for him. because he's already got you. Doesn't have to pursue. He doesn't have to pay any particular attention to making sure that he's making you feel safe and comfortable in the relationship or making you feel special. Now, I'm not saying that because you slept with him too soon that he's not going to treat you special. I'm not saying that because, of course, a lot of men do then go on to treat a woman very special. But here's the dynamic that is not so good for you. When the choosing is over for you and the chasing is over for him, then at that point you've locked yourself into a relationship that has a lot of obligation to it, but you've never gotten across those bridges of love and attachment and excitement and joy. It rushes the relationship forward into something that often creates too much sense of obligation on his part, and if he's really not ready for that level of obligation, he could even be feeling guilty about the fact that he's essentially created this huge attachment between the two of you. So, and the other thing that becomes a problem is that when you sleep with someone too soon, you can be blinded by attachment. So you don't see the warning signs. If he's emotionally unavailable, or if he's a guy who's really not going to be good for you, maybe even a somewhat of a bad boy. But because you've had sex, because you're so attached, now you are blinded by that attachment. It makes it very difficult for you to see what you need to see so that you can continue to make judgment calls about whether or not this relationship is going to be right for you in the long run. All right, the number two way that I think women sometimes wreck perfectly good budding relationships, brand new relationships, is spending way too much time together, too much too soon. Too much too soon. Spending every available moment together. You make yourself totally available from the beginning. So that if he calls you on Friday afternoon or Friday right after lunch and says, "Hey, can you go out tonight?" you say yes. If he says, "Oh, by the way, can you go out tomorrow night as well?" Oh, yes. So you're always a big walking yes. You're totally available. You have no life. There's no pushback. There's never, "Well, not tomorrow night, but I could a couple of nights from now. I've already got plans tomorrow night," when he calls at the last minute. So by making yourself totally available and spending every moment together, what you do is you don't give yourself any space in the relationship to, first of all, for him to miss you a little bit, which creates a little bit of longing and pursuit behavior on his part. So there's no space for that. There's also no space to reflect on the relationship so that you can be assessing whether or not this is good for you. Well, he's cute, but do I share any values with him? There's certainly chemistry here, but do we have anything to talk about? You know, these assessments you need to be making early in a relationship before you get so heavily involved that you don't know how to take a step back anymore. And relationships need a little space in order to do that. In fact, having a little space in a relationship is a good thing to have throughout life. There's something about just being glued together at the hip to someone 24/7 that just doesn't seem to make for a real healthy dynamic. Most of us don't have time for that, but if you do have time for that and that's what you do, it can lead you to, I think, a relationship dynamic that then becomes a really big issue later whenever somebody else in the relationship, whenever someone wants to individuate a little more, have a little more of a life of their own, it's not okay. Okay, so now going back to the early stages of a relationship, you need that space to reflect on the relationship. Also, by spending all of your time together, the relationship, you know, if you're dating someone and you don't even know them very well, it can start to feel like a marriage almost. It can start to feel like, well, there's nothing left for us to do. Even marriage wouldn't be more significant to this. I mean, we're just practically glued together. So if he feels like he's already married to you, but he never got the chance to ask you, well, that may not feel very good to him. He needs to cross that bridge emotionally so that then he's in a position to feel really good about the time that you spend together. And I think also when you're spending way too much time together in the early stages of a relationship, one or maybe both of you begin to have a lot of expectations. It's so intense. You know, you can begin to feel like that you are one another's be-all, end-all in life. And then that creates a level of expectation that's very difficult to live up to. Because, of course, one person cannot be another person's entire life. Each individual in a relationship needs to have other people and other interests and other things, friendships, and ways to be involved in life that they can then come back and share about, but that are not so all-inclusive of one another. Okay. The third thing that I think women sometimes do that can wreck a potential new relationship would be this, and that is becoming everything you think he wants in a woman. So there's no individual person over here. It's everything. You're everything he wants, or you think you are being everything that he wants. You stop focusing on your own life. You stop focusing on your personal goals. You stop focusing on your professional goals. You stop all the activities that you had before you met him. You stop spending time with old friends. His friends become your friends, but not vice versa. So that becomes what is happening. His beliefs are yours. His pastimes are yours. In other words, there's no me in the you and me anymore. It's just you. Well, here's the problem with that. If he likes that behavior, problem with that, he's probably pretty emotionally fragile and needy. If he needs you to be all about him, he's probably narcissistic too. So the whole relationship is going to be all about him and his needs until one day you can't take it anymore. That's not a healthy dynamic. A relationship is two people. It needs to be about two people. Two people have a life. Two people have interests. Two people have friends. Two people have other things going on, and they share those things when they get together. That's a much healthier dynamic. All right, and number four, I think this is one of the biggest mistakes sometimes that women make, and it is pursuing him. It's calling him, texting him, asking him out early in the relationship. It's taking over the pursuing part of the relationship. It's taking the lead instead of taking your cues. And what that does is create a relationship dynamic where he's not able to pursue. So men love to pursue. Unless, I have to give you an exception here, the guys who don't want to pursue are the ones who are usually too passive or too fragile. Now, remember that a guy with a shaky ego, in other words, he's too emotionally fragile to pursue you because he can't stand to take the risk that you might reject him. That's a really shaky ego. Makes for a very shaky lover. A really not all the way there lover. So if a guy likes the fact that you are pursuing him, that's actually a warning sign. Now, I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with a guy who enjoys the fact that if he calls you, you call him back, you know, that enjoys the fact that if he sends you an email, you respond, or that after you've been dating for a few weeks, you pick up some tickets to a show and you invite him or after you've been dating a few weeks, you invite him over to your house and cook dinner. I'm not talking about that. Of course, any live guy, any living guy would love that, you know, if he's, that feels good to know that the person that he's pursuing is very, very interested in him. I'm talking about very early in the relationship, the first few weeks, that it doesn't typically work for you as the woman to do the pursuing, for you to be doing most of the calling and texting and emailing and asking him out. And the reason for that is because men really, men who have a decent level of, good, healthy ego, really love that because he thrives on that. It opens up, when a man pursues, it opens up his heart. It activates the dopamine in the brain, so he feels pleasure in the pursuit and activates all that good brain chemistry for him. Men get their best brain chemistry out of the pursuit of worthwhile goals. By the way, we all do, but for men, it's really tripled the case. And if you take that away from him, if you chase him and you take that away from him, then he flips over into some very negative emotions like guilt and obligation. And what that does is shut down the pleasure centers in the brain. Not a good scenario for guys. Men need to feel the pleasure of the pursuit. The other thing that it does is it robs you of the ability to discern just how much he's into you and just how emotionally available he is. Because if he's not having to pursue you, you don't get that strong sense of, wow, I know he's really, really into me. I know he's really, really interested in me. And if you're having to make excuses for that and you're having to fill in the gaps, ultimately that is not going to be very fulfilling for you. So in a moment, we're going to take a break right now, and we'll be back with more love strategies after this break. And I'm going to be covering the solutions to these four dating, I want to call them missteps, and what you can do about them, how it is that you can step in the right direction. I'm also going to be taking some questions, been getting some emails from some people, and so I want to answer those questions on the air as well. All right, so stick around. We'll be right back. Back with more love strategies. At least I think we are, because I think the music is still playing, so hold on. we're back with more love strategies. That was a long break. Don't you just love technology? Playing the music, and the music keeps going. Tried to stop the music, couldn't stop it. So that was a nice long break. I hope you used it to your advantage. All right, so we're talking about the four ways that women often torpedo perfectly good relationships, or what could be great relationships, and those are having sex too soon, spending too much time together, too much too soon, becoming everything you think he wants in a woman instead of just being yourself, and then, of course, taking the lead. You're doing all the pursuing instead of letting him pursue you. So those things don't work, and I think that they fail to establish a healthy foundation for a relationship. You're setting the wrong tone. The tone that you're setting with those four behaviors is one of desperation. It's one of too much neediness. It's one of you being too much of an empty well that he's got to fill. That's not going to be a good tone for you to set for your relationship. So instead, I want to suggest that you set an entirely different tone in the beginning of your relationship. And that is, and you know what I think the data shows us that something like 80% or more of all communication takes place non-verbally, meaning that we are sending messages to people all the time by the way that we behave, the way that we respond, and and certainly facial expressions. People read your emotions far faster than they do anything else, so you're setting that tone with your behavior. And what you want to do is set the stage or the tone early in a relationship for something that's going to be a good, loving, healthy dynamic. And so what it is you want to convey, not by saying it, because of course if you're saying it, it's probably not real, but by showing it with your actions and behavior, and that is this message. I'm interested in you, but I'm not desperate. I don't have to have you. I'm interested in you, but I have a life already. You know, I have a good life. And yes, I want to spend my time with you, but I don't need to spend all my time with you. I don't need to fill up my life with you because I already have a life, and it's a good life. It's not a life that there is no room for a person, because you don't want to convey that message. That's not a good message. It's a good, full, you know, I'm content with my life. It's positive. I have friends. I have interests. I have work that I enjoy. And the other message that you want to send is this. Sex is special, and I'm saving it for someone special with whom I have a committed love relationship. And this may be you. Maybe you're even waiting till marriage. But you want to send that message. And then last of all, although I'm interested in you, I am not going to chase you. I'm not going to be the one to pursue you. That's your job as the guy in the beginning of the relationship. I will show you my interest by how I respond to you. So if you can manage to convey those kinds of things from early in a relationship, that is a great beginning for setting the stage for something that could be really well balanced and healthy, something that will bring joy to both of you, that will be an enhancement to both of your lives. It will not make your life, because your life is good to start with, his, yours, everybody's, but it will enhance your life. So that's what the goal is here. All right, I'm getting some questions that have been sent to me over email, so I want to take a moment and respond to a couple of them. And this question is from Vivian. And Vivian writes to me and says, "Dear Nina, I've been with my boyfriend for 7 years. I'm a divorced mother of one child. I have tried to prevent further trauma to my son by remaining in the marital home." All right, and then she says, "My relationship was very up and down with this man for the first 4 years, and after many split ups, he appears to be more committed. So now she's talking about the man that she's dating. She says, so he's not going out to nightclubs as much as he was. The problem is that he is very jealous and upsets me when I try to do things on my own, like going on a conference for my business or doing things with my friends. In my previous marriage, I could do whatever I wanted, and now I feel that I am stunting myself. I do love this man, but how do I keep me? So Vivian asked a very good question, and this is what I want to say to you, Vivian. I don't know which came first, his jealousy, you know, he may just be wired that way, or your lack of commitment to him, and as displayed by the fact that you are remaining in the same home with your ex-husband. Because I think that your living with the ex-husband may be provoking the boyfriend. In other words, I can understand why he would perhaps feel a little bit jealous in general if that's your living situation. But either way, you have a very complicated situation and it's not going to be healthy. It's not going to be conducive to a healthy relationship if you continue it just the way it is. Now, I want to acknowledge you for wanting to minimize the trauma to your son. You know, good for you. There's I think, far too many single parents who just do whatever the heck they feel like doing, irregardless of how it affects their children. It's all about getting their needs met and not really taking into account the needs of the children in the household. So I'm really glad that you are thinking about your son and thinking about what's going to be good for him. But that said, you know, when you choose to live with your ex-husband, I think you're also choosing to be unavailable for new relationships. And that's not healthy for you. It's not healthy for any new man in your life or for your son to try to do both. So I think it's time for you to move forward and get your own place. I think this will do several things. You know, one is your ex-husband can move on with his life. That's going to be healthy for him. Your son will be less confused, and you can move on with your life, and your boyfriend will be less confused. So let's talk about your son just a little bit. It's been 4 years, and I think that is long enough now for you to be able to sit down with your son and explain to him that his parents are not going to live together and they're not going to be married, but they will always both be his parents and will always love him and place him first in their lives. I think you can handle that with him with the help of your ex-husband. And then going ahead and separating then and moving out and getting your own place and just making sure that you and your ex-husband are always on the same page about how you parent and the time that you are each going to be spending with him. And I think that frees both of you up to tell the truth about your relationship, which is that you are no longer married, and that you are going to each of you be exploring new relationships in a safe kind of way, given that you have a child. So once you get all that lined up and you're in your own house, I think then you have the opportunity to find out if your boyfriend is jealous because that's just the way he is, that maybe that's how he's wired and it's not going to change, or if it was the circumstances that were provoking him. And if it's the circumstances, he's probably going to calm down once you have your own home and he gets to have, you know, time with you, that he's alone with you whenever your son is at your ex-husband's home, then he should calm down. But if you move out and get your own place and you've created a really good environment now for that relationship to move forward, but you still find out that he's jealous of everything you do, jealous of work commitments, jealous of your friendships, and so on, then I think you have to say that's probably how he's wired. And then you've got to move on from that relationship, because when women marry jealous men, they often find their lives gradually shutting down over time. And a jealous man is an insecure man. In other words, he's so frightened that you are going to meet someone else who is better than he is because he is so insecure. He sees it that way, or he feels that way. He's so frightened of that he feels the need to control you and keep you from basically having any kind of a life away from him. And this is a formula for reverse actualization. So instead of expanding who you are as a woman, which is the way it should be, you shrink who you are in order to appease him. You'll lose your authentic voice, and I think that's really tragic. I think far too many women settle for this kind of limiting relationship out of pathological attachments that they misread as love. You know, real love provides room for each person in the relationship to grow and actualize. Real love, as the Bible says, is not jealous. Real love is acceptance for who you are and support for your growth. And I am not talking about people who are in committed relationships or marriages who say, you know, we don't have any jealousy. We do whatever we want, including going out and getting drunk with people of the opposite gender. No, I'm not talking about that kind of. I'm talking about being able to actualize that there are interests that you have that have nothing to do with being around other men or having flirtatious relationships or anything like that. But there are interests that you pursue. There are work things that you want to do, those kinds of things. There should always be room for that for both parties in a relationship. So if you haven't, Vivian, already read Temptations of the Single Girl, you really want to get that book and read it, because one of the 10 temptations that you have to overcome is sacrificing your authentic voice, giving up who you are in order to try to appease a man. Doesn't work. Need to figure out what you need to do instead. So get the book and read it. That will help you with that. All right, so I've got another question coming in from Matt. And Matt is writing in and saying, "Dear Nina, I'm a guy, I'm 33 years old, and I have made a commitment to myself to stay out of the bedroom at least until there is a commitment and hopefully even until marriage. He says, I feel that finding out sexual compatibility before marriage should not be a requirement. I cannot fathom being in love and then letting performance in bed be the deciding factor. This position makes it difficult for me to ask women out, as I'm afraid that she will demand an early sexual relationship. How do I stick to my principles and let go of this anxiety so that I can date?" Well, Matt, You're actually onto something here, because contrary to popular belief, sexual compatibility is not about performance in bed. The mechanics of sex are just that. They're mechanics. You know, do this, do that, put this here, touch that, so on. That's mechanics. These are things that you could learn from a how-to manual on sex. And you can learn them in your relationship from teaching one another what you like and don't like. So when two people love each other and they're committed to the relationship and they have good communication skills and are unafraid to discuss the intimate details of their sexual needs, sex works. But, you know, the thing that I find really fascinating about people is that it seems that talking about sex is more challenging than actually doing it. And this is because we live in a society in which just open, frank discussion of sexuality is considered taboo. However, what is not taboo is sexually explicit advertising, television and movies, which display promiscuous behavior. Somehow that's okay, but talking about it is not. And so then we have all this controversy over whether or not to provide sex education in the schools because nobody wants to talk about it. But it's fine to see all of it and show it. So it's a really mixed up message, and that we are just beginning to start to sort that out, but we have a long way to go. And so meanwhile, often couples who are dating just head for the bedroom and figure they'll talk later. And that's a huge mistake. Sexual compatibility is really mostly about energy. It's about chemistry. It's that you feel passionate about each other and about the relationship, and that you want to be intimate and deepen your connection, and that's what empowers you as a couple to work out your issues, including the ones that come out about sex. You can explore your attitudes and your beliefs and your feelings about sex with all your clothes on. That's not a function of jumping in bed together. I think by putting off sex until you have a commitment or even until you are married, if that's what your value system tells you to do, I think that opens the possibility for you to practice meaningful communication about sex. Because if you can imagine yourself when you're dating someone that you can express those values and that you can set appropriate boundaries with the women you date, how powerful is that? And any woman who has sexual boundaries herself, who has good values, is going to really respect that. And I think that that also gives you the time to develop your relationship connection without those distortions that you get when you become sexual before you're really in love and committed. So I would encourage you to hold tight to your convictions and keep your values and trust that the right person for you is going to have no trouble with what you are doing, with respecting your position and being aligned with you. I think that you can show your attraction to a woman. You can definitely, you know, in the way that you look at her and the way you hold her hand and the way you kiss her, and you can show her that you're wild about her without actually having to have sex with her. So good for you for having a set of values about it and for sticking with it. All right, so we've talked tonight about dating violence. I think it's a big issue that needs to be looked at more and more in our society. And I think the other thing is looking at how to set a healthy foundation for a relationship, and how to set the tone for something that's going to be healthy and balanced between the two of you. So thank you for joining us tonight on the show, for listening, and for sending your questions to me later. Please do send your emails to nina@singlescoach.com and give me your questions about love, life, dating, and relationships. I'll queue them up for another show. You can actually call in for the show, or I'll just answer your question over air. You be sure and send me plenty of details in your email, including your age and the age of the person you're dating and what is the question that you really want to have answered. So do join us again. We'll not be having a show next week. It's July 4th weekend. It's a holiday for Love Strategies, but we'll be back the following Sunday with more Love Strategies. And the thing that I want to leave you with is to remember there's really only one way to great relationships, and that is to live a joyful life of integrity, spirit, and purpose. I'll catch you the next time for the next show. And I hope that I will be with you. I hope that you will be with me again whenever we have the show in 2 weeks.
Thank you for joining us at Love Strategies. Be sure and visit the premier website for single men and women who want to date smart, singlescoach.com. Sign up for the newsletter and you'll get notifications for this show as well as other free dating tips. If you want a coach to support you in your growth and recovery, go to Singles Coaching on the website and choose personal coaching. That's it for today, and be sure and tune back in for more Love Strategies so you can date smart and find the love of your life.